Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
The 8 o'clock hour. Wow, Tito is banging his head over there. And not in, like, the hurtful way, like the 90s headbanging type of way. It is the 8 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show here on WQAM. World Cup starts in less than 48 hours, which, even if you are a Team USA guy and you're disappointed you're not in it, or if you cheer for Italy like I do, or you're a Netherlands fan and you're spurned, I'm still excited about this, man. The World Cup is still, for my money, the best sporting event on the planet. And it comes around every 4 years, but I will take it over any Olympics. I will take it even over the European Cup. I love the World Cup. And on our hotline right now, the Toyota of Hollywood hotline, Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Dre Cordero, a new friend of the show from BN Sports, does a great job play-by-play for that network and does some studio work as well. And Dre, you guys will be hosting a special 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. tomorrow, centered around the 2026 announcement tomorrow morning. Is that correct?
That's right. I'm actually really psyched for that, but my voice, not so much. I seem to be losing my voice today, which is less than ideal for a soccer broadcaster 48 hours before the start of a World Cup.
Oh, yeah, you're going to have to take, like, more of, like, the British approach and like, pretend you're calling, like, a golf event versus the over-the-top.
Like, basically. Which will be really fun, I think, at 6 o'clock in the morning tomorrow. That's sort of soft-spoken. No, tomorrow is the bid, and it's down to basically we find out which bid is the winning bid, down to the United bid between the United States, Canada, and Mexico, or Morocco's bid to host the 2026 World Cup, which is going to be a bit of a World Cup no matter where it's played, because it's going to expand to 48 teams. So that should be interesting.
I do like that expansion, but let me start with who might get it tomorrow, Dre. I know I'm very biased, being a person living in the United States, but to me, like, it sounds like a bid, a joint bid between the USA, Canada, and Mexico. It seems to me like a no-brainer that would beat out Morocco, but obviously FIFA is going to FIFA potentially. Do you have a feeling? Do you have a feeling heading into tomorrow who is going to win that bid?
If my feeling leans toward Morocco, I mean,
wow,
as much as anybody, I'd love to have the United bid be the winning bid. I think it's the bid that makes more sense. It's probably the better bid of the two, in my humble opinion. But as you said, FIFA will FIFA, and I think it was a bit of a surprise for Brazil to have gotten it, certainly a surprise for Russia, and then the next World Cup is going to be in Qatar. So you never really can predict these things. And while FIFA has been cleaned up a bit, just maybe a shade or a degree, I don't think they've really taken significant steps of doing away with the kind of corruption that our FBI and our Justice Department in the United States helped to sort of uncover and scatter the roaches and arrested quite a few top FIFA individuals. So if you haven't completely cleaned up the system, I don't think there's a ton of people who are super eager to reward the United States in FIFA because there's still a bit of corruption there.
Wow. So there are mysteries still to be solved. So I'd recommend if you're up early, as I am, Dre, because I have a 3.5-month-old, so I will be up early. I will watch you guys on BN Sports tomorrow. And of course, the World Cup starts in a couple of days here on the 14th. You know, let me start, Dre, with some of the teams that didn't make it. You know, I mentioned no Team USA, no Italy, no Netherlands. Which one of those teams do you think the World Cup is going to miss most?
By far, Italy. Italy are an absolute, you know, powerhouse. So a past World Cup winner. I mean, champions as recently as 2006. For me, it was inconceivable. I think we've seen Netherlands underperform in the past. We've seen them miss out on important events. The United States is not a huge shock, especially if you were following the entire World Cup qualifying process. I mean, it was a shock, don't get me wrong, but not to the extent that not having Italy at the World Cup. I mean, Italy do sort of represent that very small group of absolute elite footballing powerhouses, and to not have the Azzurri there is really, it takes away from the World Cup to a degree, but you know what? You have to earn it to get there.
Right.
I think the European system is pretty forgiving and pretty permissive. So I think it's on Italy.
I agree. And I root for that team, Dre. And I agree that that team completely underperformed and is in need of a huge overhaul.
Yeah, no question. They look like a team without direction. They should have absolutely beaten Sweden. But you know what? Serie A has changed, and a lot of the Italian players do stay domestically. I don't think defensively the league is as solid as it used to be. Attacking-wise, offensively, it's certainly much more entertaining, but that sort of betrays the traditional style of Italian football. If you look at the 2006 World Cup, in my opinion, it was one of the most defensive World Cups that I've seen in a long time, and Germany were the best defensive side, and they won it as a result. This team it has a little bit of an identity crisis, I think. I can't tell you why they missed out. I can't really explain it away. They should be there, and they're not. And I think that makes them the most shocking snub or omission.
Now, for the teams that are in this, let me look first at Argentina, because they are stacked. I mean, you look at some of the players from Argentina who didn't even get called for this World Cup, and it's astounding, especially forwards. But, you know, you look at Lionel Messi, who is... He is 30, and he does have a great supporting cast around him, Dre. How much pressure is on Messi and Argentina to win a cup this year?
Yeah, I don't think it changes much, because the pressure really on Argentina, and especially on Lionel Messi, is constant and has been constant for about a decade now. So I don't think it's new. I don't think it surprises them. It's sort of their natural habitat is to be under that pressure. And believe me, it's a lot worse in Argentina, what they get from home than what they get from abroad, or you know, the interest outside of Argentina. They're very cynical about the national team. I think a lot of nations would be happy to have reached a World Cup final and back-to-back continental finals like Argentina did. In most of those cases, it was Messi sort of dragging Argentina there, because while they are stacked up front, you mentioned the attacking talent. I mean, Mauro Icardi didn't make the squad, and he was the top scorer in the Italian top flight for the second time in his career. He's a young, very talented player that you know, any team would like to have as starting number nine, and he doesn't make the squad. The way I see Argentina is I think Messi is the fifth best national team on the planet. And I do see the individualism of Messi, how individually good he is, has sort of gotten them above the hump. Because in 2014 in Brazil, the World Cup, they were probably in a weaker group than they are this time out. And if not for Messi scoring two late goals in stoppage time in the group stage, they maybe don't get out of the group stage. And he dragged that group to the final where it just wasn't enough. And even then, they were one potentially Higuain penalty call away from beating Germany at the World Cup. So they're not a strong team. They have some good individual talent. I think the collective has always been the question. And now the manager, Jorge Sampaoli, has been dealing with some accusations of a personal nature, which certainly is not the kind of distraction you would want ahead of the World Cup. The only reason we give Argentina a shot is because Messi is that good.
Who is your favorite heading into this World Cup, Dre?
It's Brazil. It's not the most adventurous choice. In fact, I think it's a very safe choice. Most people would likely go with Brazil or Germany as the right top two teams. I think Spain are in the conversation as well. I think it sort of dips after that to maybe, you know, France, though not really at the same level. But for me, this Brazil, ever since the coach took over during the World Cup qualifiers in South America, they looked absolutely unbeatable almost from the start. I mean, he made them defensively solid, but allowed the players up top, the front four, the front five, to really express themselves. And for the first time in a long time, we saw Brazilians having fun, and we saw the return of Jogo Bonito, and they were sort of unleashing Neymar and unleashing Coutinho. And now I think Douglas Costa, who had a terrific season for Juventus, has a lot to give them too. I look at them as having a stellar goalkeeper in Alisson, who just had his first season as a starter for Roma and might have been the best goalkeeper in Italy this past season. He's one of the best on the world of the planet. A very solid and experienced and veteran backline. The midfield is not only strong but creative, and then up front, just absolute thoroughbred racehorses in Neymar, Coutinho, Gabriel Jesus. I think they're stacked. I think they're deep, and I think they're very solid defensively, which just makes them so dangerous.
We're talking with Dre Cordero, play-by-play man for BN Sports. Does an excellent job calling Serie A games. You know, I love them. La Liga games as well. Great job. If you follow that network, you know Dre Cordero. I think one of the more common questions that I get asked, Dre, talking World Cup, so I thought this is a great one to pass to you. Is there a team or teams you look at as potential sleepers, maybe non-traditional powers who could make a run this summer?
Strangely, this is sort of an old-school traditional power that hasn't been a power in a long time, because Uruguay have won two World Cups, but those were black-and-white television World Cups.
Yeah, that's right, in like the 30s and 50s.
Yeah. Right. I think the first one might have been sort of an Olympics that was seen in retroactively as a World Cup. A long, long time ago, though, they are two-time World Cup winners. I think this year, this is sort of the right ingredients at the right time for Uruguay, because they've got a manager who has been around since 2006, and so it's sort of a very steady process. And at times, Uruguay were reluctant to change. They were consistent almost to a fault where Oscar Washington Tabata is the manager, would just sort of go with the guys that got him there all the time, was very resistant to change, very reluctant to give sort of the younger players a chance. But we're talking about a nation of 3 million people that produces world-class talent of the level of a Luis Suarez, an Edison Cavani, a Godin, the starting center back and captain of Atletico Madrid. And these are elite sort of world-class level players who are coming out of a very small nation. But now you add Rodrigo Bentancourt, who was actually quite good in a supporting role for Juventus this past season, Lucas Torreira, who I think is one of the players who can go from being a relative unknown to a household name if he gets the minutes in Russia 2018. The midfield is more creative than it has been in years past, where they were very sort of workmanlike kind of midfielders, very rough and rugged. They were more disruptive in trying to break up the way the opposition play. Well, I think there's still that's sort of ingrained in the DNA of how Uruguay play football. But individually, they have the talent now in midfield to not only destroy, but also create. So I think they can create more chances for the likes of Luis Suarez and Edinson Cavani. It is sort of the last hurrah for those three players that I mentioned, Suarez, Cavani, and Godin. I expect those guys to be the leaders for Uruguay. And don't be surprised to see Uruguay make a run to the semifinals. I think they'll match up against Portugal, the European champions, likely in the round of 16. I can see them beating Portugal. A bigger challenge in the quarterfinals potentially against France, but this France has been known to implode, and I wouldn't be surprised to see Uruguay make the semifinals.
I got to tell you, one of our producers here, Alex Solana, is a huge Uruguay fan. That's where his family is from. So if he's listening, and he does listen a lot, he's probably just smiling from ear to ear after hearing that assessment, which was fantastic. And for my producer here in the studio, Dre, he's a huge Man City fan. I got to ask you if, and I know that there are kind of, you know, transfer window reports are crazy, but it seems to me like a good chance that Jorginho ends up from Napoli to Man City. And of course, you called a lot of his games at Napoli recently. How good of a fit would Jorginho, who I thought was the engine that made Saudi Ball go, and he's no longer the manager at Napoli, but how could Jorginho fit in at Man City?
I'm not at all surprised to see Pep Guardiola, the Manchester City manager, be interested in Jorginho. I mean, he brings similar characteristics to Sergio Busquets, who Guardiola basically unearthed from the Barcelona B team playing in the third division when he first started managing. And he's sort of the metronome in midfield of that Barcelona team that won the first ever Spanish treble. I think Jorginho, while not being Sergio Busquets, doing it in his own way, has some of those similar characteristics where he really can sort of, you know, gauge the temperature of the match, slow it down, speed it up however he needs. His positioning is excellent. His distribution is even better. So I think Jorginho could sort of slot directly into the starting 11 for Manchester City or potentially play alongside Fernandinho. It would be a great grab, I think, for any team on the planet. And again, I'm not surprised to see Guardiola in particular choose him. Remember, that was Guardiola's playing position back in the day for Spain and Barcelona and all the clubs where he was at. So he sort of values that. He wants what the Italians call a regista, what Andrea Pirlo was, sort of a playmaker who plays just in front of the back four, who can bring the ball forward from the defense to the attack.
And Tito, by the way, the Man City fanboy, says he's got to ask you something.
All right, so my question is, obviously everybody's anticipating LeBron's decision, but in the soccer world, there's a lot of people anticipating Antoine Griezmann's decision on whether or not he's going to go to Barcelona. Do you see him sticking it out with Atletico?
So it really looks like it's 50-50 right now. Antoine Griezmann just recently said in his last press conference that his decision has already been made up. He said in the past that he would tell us what the decision is before the World Cup starts, which, you know, the clock is ticking on that. He just felt like today or this last press conference wasn't the right moment to say it. There have been plenty of reports that he had a pre-contract agreement with Barcelona in place for quite some time. But the reports coming out of the sort of inner circle, quote-unquote, as the European papers like to say, of Antoine Griezmann are suggesting that they want him to stay and that he's thinking about staying. Now, he says the decision's already made up. We really have no insight as to what that ultimate decision has been from him. But Atletico took a positive step toward potentially keeping Antoine Griezmann when they signed Thomas Lemar from Monaco. He'll be at the World Cup with France, and he's a very promising winger who's actually been tearing it up for a good 2-3 seasons now in Ligue 1 at Monaco. And Griezmann was said to be instrumental in bringing Lemar over to Atletico Madrid and eager to play with him. So maybe that's an indication that he'll decide to stick it out. The Atleti fans were showing him love at the end. Godin, who I mentioned for Uruguay, was a captain and leader of Atletico Madrid. At one point, when fans at the at the Wanda Metropolitano, where Atletico play, started to boo Griezmann because they thought he was leaving, Godin actually got closer to some of the more diehard fans and was saying, guys, we need to cheer this guy on because he's thinking about staying. And actually, the stadium sort of churned and started applauding Antoine Griezmann. So there have been hints that even though he seemed destined for Barcelona, he may decide to stick it out, but ultimately only he really knows.
I've got one here for Dre, and then I'll ask him one text question. Dre Cordero from BN Sports is with us. Dre, you know that you're talking to me. I've got to ask you an Inter question. There's talk of Nainggolan reuniting with Spalletti at Inter, coming over from Roma. But then you also have Rafinha, who wants to stay at Inter. If there could only be one, obviously for me, I'm greedy. I'd love to have both. But if there can only be one, who would be the better fit, Rafinha or Nainggolan?
Yeah, I think that's really well put when you ask better fit, right? Because I think in terms of a locker room presence, a guy who's not going to be too disruptive and who can be, you know, that number 10, that creative presence, it's probably Rafinha. But the guy who gives you the best impact on the pitch is Roger Nainggolan. I would be hesitant with Roger Nainggolan just because this guy, to me, is one of the best midfielders on the planet and isn't going to the World Cup of Belgium. Mm. And the current Belgian coach, Roberto Martinez, is not the first one to ostracize him and to set him apart. And there have been plenty of reports in Rome, where he plays for Roma, in the Italian capital, that he maybe doesn't take the best care of his body, that he likes to go out late at night and party, that he smokes cigarettes. Again, these are reports, a sort of tabloid kind of nonsense, but it's been circling him his entire career, and he hasn't been able to shake it off. And then I see how important, how influential he is for Roma, how just devastating he is as a player, because he can shoot with his right or his left from distance. He's actually both a destroyer and a creator. He can play as a playmaker. He can play as a defensive midfielder. I think he would start for almost any major club team on the planet, and yet those sort of extras, those off-the-field issues have sort of swirled around him. That's the only concern I would have. That said, Spalletti obviously had him. If Spalletti wants him at Inter, that would be sort of a sign that Spalletti trusts him and that he doesn't have those issues with this particular manager, who's a manager with significant clout in Serie A. So in a perfect world where I'm going to get absolute professionalism from both, I'm taking Roger Nainggolan. If I have some questions about how really he's going to react and take to the brighter lights of San Siro, maybe I go with Rafinha, who I know was already there and eager to play well.
And lastly, I have to ask you this, going back to the World Cup, and then we'll let you rest the voice up for the big show tomorrow morning, because we're getting so many texts. A lot of our listeners root for Colombia. Do you see them making a run in the Cup?
So Colombia, I think we're gifted a group that is relatively accessible to them, because they're not at their best moment. They were absolutely brilliant early on in World Cup qualifying and maybe tailed off. But they're in Group H with Poland, Senegal, and Japan. So I absolutely see them getting out of the group. The question is, what happens then? Because they're going up against a relatively young and energetic, potentially England, in the round of 16. I think Colombia could beat them and then face Germany in the quarterfinals, and that would more than likely be the end of the tournament if they do come up against Germany in the quarterfinals. England even would be a test, I think, in the round of 16. I love Colombian football. I love the joy that they bring to the game. James Rodriguez is an absolute difference maker. Falcao was a very, you know, returned to his best goal-scoring days this past season with Monaco. So there's a lot to like about Colombia. But maybe the best thing you see about them is that they've got a relatively accessible and pretty easy group, but I can't see them getting beyond, say, the quarterfinals, which I think would be a positive for Colombia should they reach that far.
And unbelievable stuff here. Enjoy that coverage tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. on BN Sports. Dre Cordero will be among those covering the announcement tomorrow for the 2026 World Cup. Will it be North America? Will it be the United States, Canada, Mexico? Or will it be Morocco? We'll find out tomorrow. And follow this man on Twitter, at Dre Cordero. Thank you so much, man.
Much appreciated, man. Take care.
Yeah, fantastic stuff there. The Alex Dono Show continues next here on 560 QAM.
Live from the Edmore Sawgrass Radio.com. Radio.com.
Out to the Toyota of Hollywood hotline. Toyota of Hollywood has moved two blocks south of their old location. Get there now. Our friend Manny Navarro from the Miami Herald joins us. Manny, are you, I'm not sure if you're a soccer fan. Do you have a team you'll be rooting for in the World Cup starting in a couple days?
No, you know, I always kind of adopt a team once the action starts. I always root for the underdogs, whoever that is. And they usually don't get very far because, I mean, it's usually always the favorites that win that thing. But
true.
I'll start watching and, you know, whoever I've got a beer in my hand with and I'm watching, I'll be cheering for them.
Well, and make sure you don't get too distracted, because I know there's going to be a lot of free agent speculation and rumors and maybe some substantive stuff to cover here over the next couple of weeks. And, you know, Manny, I want to start with LeBron James. Over a year ago on this show, you were one of the first to say that the Philadelphia 76ers could be – a serious landing spot for LeBron. They have been in that conversation recently. It seems like they're losing some momentum in that conversation, though, with Los Angeles really becoming the darling and the favorite for a lot of people. Are you still in with the Sixers, or are you starting to kind of shift your focus on a different spot for LBJ?
Well, I mean, it's been those two teams that I thought all along were the best places for him to end up, or the more likely places, and that was mainly because they had salary cap space to play with and ways to sort of upgrade their roster one way or the other. And so I thought those would be the two landing spots. I was the first one to actually mention Philly down here.
Yeah, like you were. Here.
But you just look at the numbers and you look at the youth on those rosters and you say to yourself that's an ideal place. But you know, you're right. I think the more that we hear, you know, sort of Dwayne coming out last week and sort of saying he thinks this is going to come down to family, LeBron saying this is going to come down to family, the more I start to lean towards a place like L.A. where I'm sure he would be more than happy to live with his family. You know, he's got houses over there already, and the future of what LeBron wants to do as far as, you know, movies, production, all the things that he's already a part of, but maybe that he could put a lot more of his fingerprints on. It's out there in California, so maybe that's the place. But again, I don't know, man. I keep thinking back that this guy really wants to catch Jordan. He wants to win championships, and I haven't heard anything to the contrary yet, and I think Philadelphia is the best place for him to do that, not L.A.
On that note, on the note of winning championships, I can't in my wildest dreams imagine this, but every time you look at the Vegas odds and every time you look at the columns being written, these are the 7 teams or the 10 teams that LeBron will consider, you always do see that Golden State Warriors logo pop up in there, which is, I mean, that's a tough sell for me, Manny, but yeah, if you were going to try and chase rings, if you can join forces with KD and Steph and Draymond Green, and if they can find a way fiscally to even keep Klay Thompson on that team, yeah, you're probably guaranteed 4 or 5 more championships if you join that team.
Absolutely. I mean, ideally, that is the place where you're guaranteed a ring. But I wonder how much, you know, from watching Kevin Durant sort of go through, I don't want to call it a bad stage of his career because he's won championships, but a point in his career where everybody's sort of critical of him for joining a winner and not trying to win a championship himself. I wonder how much LeBron looks at that situation and says, I just can't. My legacy is too important to me. I can't sort of go and ruin it at the end and just jump on a team to collect rings. I don't see him doing that. I think this is a guy who thinks 3 steps ahead, and I think, you know, they can keep putting that Golden State Warriors logo up there, but I don't see LeBron sort of taking the easy way out of this.
KD said something a couple days ago after taking a second straight Finals MVP, and I thought that this maybe could have been a little bit of a dig at either Russell Westbrook or even at LeBron James, KD saying that, you know, for his situation, it's more difficult to stand out on a great team than it is to be a good player on a bad team. Is he right there, Manny? Because I go to a couple of examples there where I look at I think it was probably easier for Chris Bosh to be the number one option on Toronto than it was to try and fit with the big three in the Heat. Probably easier for Kevin Love to just put up stats on a terrible Minnesota team than to fit in with LeBron's team. Is KD onto something there when he says it's harder to stand out on a good team than to be the best player on a bad team?
Well, I mean, I guess you could make that argument, right? If you think about it, you can say it's always going to be harder when you've got great players around you to stand out. But I think in his case, most people, if you were to do a draft, a Warriors draft, and pick those players in order, I think KD would be the first guy taken every single time.
True.
As good as Steph Curry has been, he went to a situation where he was going to come in and be the best player on that team. I think the only team where KD is not the best player is if he joins LeBron.
So,
I mean, I think for him to come out and say that, I get what he's trying to get at, but at the same time, we're all smart enough to know that, look, if LeBron's not around, he's probably the best player in the NBA.
If you were to put LeBron on the Warriors and he joins forces with KD, with Steph, with Draymond Green, with Klay Thompson, you have that Golden State Warriors team with LeBron. If you were to put together an all-star team, instead of having the playoffs, the NBA says, you know what, it's pointless to have a playoff. Instead of letting other teams compete with Golden State, let's make an all-star team of the other 30 teams to go up against this Golden State team. Who would take a seven-game series in that scenario?
With LeBron on the Warriors?
Yep.
I don't know of any team that you could put together that could beat them. I mean, you'd have to have Paul George and Kawhi Leonard on those teams just to defend KD and LeBron, and then you'd need a dominant center. You'd need a Joel Embiid and Anthony Davis, somebody of that ilk, and then a dominant point guard who could really defend Steph. Then I think you give yourself a chance. I don't know if there's a perfect five out there, but I think, believe it or not, I think Boston and Philadelphia are close to sort of building that. They've got to make some trades, obviously. But if they're able to bring in a Kawhi Leonard and sign a Paul George or do something of that ilk, there's no reason to think that Philly or Boston couldn't put something together that might be certainly be able to compete with those teams.
Yeah, for the Miami Heat, as we're joined here by Manny Navarro, covers the Heat in the NBA for the Miami Herald, and also does great work here in the Entercom family, 790 The Ticket. Manny does a fantastic – he's a media star. He's the king of all media, Manny Navarro, the real king of all media. Does so much great work. I know there's a lot of pipe dreams that fans have for the Heat. Is LeBron going to come back here? Kawhi Leonard was at Chipotle at Aventura yesterday, so that surely means he's going to come to Miami.
Right.
Well, what would you put as like a real – realistic ceiling for what Pat Riley can do to make this team better this summer?
Well, I mean, I sit there and I look at it through, you know, realistic glasses, and I say to myself, the one thing I think Pat can do is manage to get one of these bad contracts off the books. If he can figure a way to do that and free up a little bit of cap space for next summer, I'm not saying he's going to do it all in one shot, but if he can get rid of Tyler Johnson, or he can move Hassan Whiteside and exchange it for a contract that expires this coming summer in 2019, where he gives himself a shot to tweak this roster, I think that's the more realistic approach. He's not going to go out and be able to acquire a Kawhi Leonard or a LeBron James or anybody of that ilk with this roster. It's more about, can he put himself in a position for next summer to be a step closer to making a real move? They're in a deep hole right now.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to look at it like you're chipping away at it. Look, they're not in the hole the Marlins are in, but they're certainly in a tough spot. And I think that the more realistic approach is, hey, can he get rid of one of these contracts this summer? Can he put the Heat in a better position for 2019? And I think he can. I think, you know, there's options out there. I think Carmelo's a realistic option. I think anybody with an expiring contract, if there's a way that he can move a Tyler Hassan, who still have 2 years left, and pick up, you know, the same amount of money or whatever, or a little bit less, and then and you know, get that contract off the books in 2019. That's a big victory for Pat Riley.
When this next NBA season starts, your best guess, Hassan Whiteside, is he still on this Heat team?
Yeah, I think he is, and I think a lot of that just has to do with, is there really a fit out there for him? Is there a team that's looking at Hassan saying, I'm willing to take a chance on him? The way last season ended, it was just so bad, especially the playoffs, that I think I don't want to say he's toxic, but I think there's a lot of teams that look at him and already had an opinion of Hassan, that he wasn't the kind of player you'd give, you know, max money to or would want to be paying max money to. So I think Hassan's back for that reason. I think Pat's better opportunity to move a contract is probably Tyler, but he's going to have to give up an asset. He's going to have to give up a Josh Richardson or a Justice Winslow or something that you want to keep around here to get rid of that contract.
You know, Manny, we're talking here to Manny Navarro. Channing Crowder actually brought up something interesting that I caught on the afternoon show today when, you know, they were kind of opining on Dwayne Wade. Dwayne Wade, who said this week that he's still uncertain on his future, whether he retires or comes back. But if he comes back, it will be with the Miami Heat. Do you think the Miami Heat, Manny, would prefer D-Wade to come back? Or do you think Pat Riley might even be saying, you know, I kind of hope D-Wade does retire this summer?
No, I think they'd welcome him back. I mean, look, he's going to sell tickets. There's going to be interest in the Heat because of him. He's going to keep them relevant. He could very well help them in free agency. And I think he played well enough in these playoffs where if there's a way for Pat to tweak this roster and continue to give Dwayne his 22 to 24 minutes off the bench, then it's a win-win. If Dwayne was in a different position where he's complaining about not starting or asking for more minutes and he just doesn't fit into this roster, it'd be a different story. But I think the Heat, if given the chance and given the opportunity where he can continue to sort of play the role that he did last year in the playoffs, I think they would take him back.
That makes a lot of sense to me. Manny Navarro covers the Miami Heat in the NBA for the Miami Herald. Enjoy the rest of your evening, sir. We appreciate you taking some time.
Good talking to you, Alex.
Always.
And enjoy the World Cup, man. I'm gonna be tuning in.
Thanks, man. And follow this man on Twitter at Manny_Navarro. Check out his work, the Miami Herald, in the actual paper, and MiamiHerald.com. Great stuff there from Manny Navarro, as always. You know, I agree with him on D-Wade. If I'm Pat Riley, I don't look at Wade and say this guy is dead weight on this roster, because he's like, unlike Udonis Haslam, and I love UD, right? Like, UD at this point is the godfather of that locker room, who happens to be taking up a roster spot, even though he's not really playing basketball. But Dwayne Wade is still more than that, right? Like, Dwayne Wade is not only a role model, a leader, another godfather in that locker room, probably even more so than Udonis Haslam because of what he's accomplished in his career. But D-Wade can actually still help this team win games. D-Wade can actually single-handedly, practically single-handedly, win this team a playoff game. I think there still is value in D-Wade, and it's not like he's a max guy. Like, you're getting D-Wade at this point on a discount. I can understand 2 years ago the line in the sand that Pat and Mickey had to draw. Wait, you want how much money per year? So you're saying our $20 million per year offer is not good enough for you? I could understand that, not wanting to pay a guy who was 34 years old at that time close to a max deal. But D-Wade is not making or commanding that type of money anymore. I think it makes all the sense in the world if he wants to come back. And I would, more than that, this is not just, well, great if he comes back, who cares if he doesn't. I think they want him to come back and play basketball again next year. The Alex Donner Show continues with you till 10 o'clock tonight here on WQAM.
Radio.com. Radio.com.
Tito Benach just asked me an incredible question. Like, honestly, if there was such a thing as food talk radio, you would be like the Anderson Cooper of food talk radio.
I appreciate that.
Why is there no food talk radio? You've got Food Network on TV. Like, you've got multiple food channels on television. Why is there no food talk on the radio?
Believe it or not, Bill Simmons has a podcast called House of Carbs.
Ah.
And it's they specifically talk about food there, and they go off into their own subjects.
All right. I mean, you can get away with like a lot more niche topics on podcasts than you can like on like to air radio, though. So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me there are food podcasts out there, but I don't think any city in the country, not New York, not Boston, not LA, not Chicago, not Miami, has like a food talk station on AM or FM radio. I don't think it exists.
I got a lot, man. I got a lot in this noggin about these taste buds.
So you asked me this question. It's incredible. So there are 7 or 8 teams. Some people even say 10 teams. I don't see that. I say there are 8 teams. I've got a list of 8 teams in front of me who could be vying for LeBron James' services this summer. If each of those teams had to prepare a dish, had to prepare a meal, because I think you can put multiple things in this plate. If each of these teams had to create a meal to win LeBron over, and Tito, I'm going to assume you want this to be like city specific, right? Like something that we specialize here in this city.
Got
to
be signature to the city.
Signature to the city.
Just be something that everybody else can make.
Prepare a dish, and you guys can help us with this at 56022 on the Kendall Toyota West Kendall Toyota text line. Prepare a dish to help woo LeBron. Let's start with a couple of the easy ones here, and we'll get to Miami, don't worry. And please text in your suggestions on Miami, because I think we've got a lot of options, to be honest. Now, a lot of the options I'll give you are our Cuban cuisine, because we bring that strong, and it's unique to this city. But I think there are a lot of options even within that. I think the easiest one is Boston. Clam chowder, some lobster, and boom. You're hit, and some of those fried clams that Tom DeAngelo, who's from Boston, talks about. So on that plate, you've got the chowder to kind of warm you up. Then you've got a plate full of fried clams and lobster, and that's the Boston dish, right?
I thought, to be honest, I thought that Miami might have presented lobster, but
no.
We're strictly going Cuban to impress LeBron here.
Yeah, no, okay, I'll say this. What about stone crab for Miami?
Okay, I
don't consider lobster to be my, I know there are Florida lobsters, but I don't consider that to be our thing. That's a New England thing to me. Okay, so
fair enough.
So Miami, I think there are Joe Stone crabs on that plate, no question.
Got a couple croquetas on there.
Oh, of course you do. I actually prefer tostones over maduros, so I would put those. Maybe throw some of both of there on that plate.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have enough. It's LeBron we're talking. He's 6'9", 260. He's got enough stomach.
Some vaca frita on that plate?
I might go, you know, just because he can probably consume a lot, I might throw a little palomilla on there, a little palomilla steak, you know?
That is another one of my favorites. And then, of course, you wash it down with a colada, some Cuban coffee.
See, now, what I would do is I would offer him that as a dessert, you know, because that's the traditional Miami does, if you want a colada. After. But really Cuban here, we give him a materva.
I've had that. That's that nasty tasting soda. I hate it.
Don't give him that.
I can't take it.
Matue, the Matue soda.
Ooh, I don't think I've tried that one. I have tried Materva, and I think it's disgusting. But I don't like the super sweet sodas. It's not my thing. When I was in Japan, they recommended try the melon soda. It'll remind you of, you know, the Cuban sodas you drink back in but I don't like those soda. And the melon soda, I didn't like that either. So, all right. So I think people will want to amend this, but I think we have the Miami plate. Right, the Miami plate. You've got some Joe Stone crabs on there. You have some tostones and maduros on that plate. Croquetas on that plate. Bisteca palomilla. And you have the colada, the Cuban coffee. And maybe throw in one of those nasty-ass sodas. What about a jupiña? Is that a...
Yes. Jupiña's in there.
I don't like that either, man. That stuff is gross. So Philly, cheesesteak and pretzel.
It's got to be an amazing cheesesteak, though.
Right.
Like it's got to be a natural, traditional Philly cheesesteak. Load it up.
Yeah.
Make it big. You know, we can't undersell LeBron here. We got to load it up.
So you're obviously going to Pat's or Gino's. So those are the famous steak spots.
Yeah, it's got to be one of those.
And then you get one of those famous Philly pretzels to go on there. And boom, I think you call it a day. So for Houston, barbecue.
Yep, I was going to say.
Texas barbecue.
Here's where we have to differentiate what Houston and San Antonio offer.
Yeah, you see, San Antonio, closer to the border, I think that's more of a Tex-Mex.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
See, Houston, you go straight up barbecue. Like, you got some ribs, you got some pulled pork,
brisket.
Some baked beans, some mashed potatoes, some brisket. That to me is a fantastic meal. Where I think San Antonio is more of like a carne asada type of situation. Tex-Mex.
Like some steak fajitas, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one.
LeBron would like some steak fajitas.
I think LeBron loves him some steak. Okay, so Los Angeles. You could also go very Mexican for that one. I think you try and differentiate it from the San Antonio Tex-Mex.
Might have to Google this one.
In-N-Out Burger. In-N-Out Burger for L.A.
Right. You're totally right. Totally in and out for LeBron.
A double animal style, but then also like throw in like a wet burrito from like the Mexican flair to kind of spice up the plate a little bit.
Give him the fries with it.
Oh yeah, you got to go in and out for LA. Now Golden State, that's in the San Francisco Bay Area. So give him some. What do they eat up there? Rice-a-roni, the San Francisco treat. Sourdough bread. I mean, okay. They also have In and Out Burger up there, but you can't be redundant. Fisherman's Wharf up there. I think they love the seafood up there. Maybe give them some swordfish. I've never been to San Francisco, so help me out. What are the best foods, like, unique to San Francisco? 56022 on Kendall Toyota and West Kendall Toyota text line. All right, so we've gone through most of these. Miami, Philly, Houston, L.A., Golden State, Boston, San Antonio. What about Cleveland? Get some pierogies on that plate? Some scrapple? Like, well, what would you do from Cleveland? Like, honestly, and I've been to Cleveland before. I couldn't figure out what the signature dish is up there. I do think they have a pretty hefty, like, Polish-American population there, so that's why I'd put pierogies in there on the Cleveland dish. But when you compare Cleveland to Boston, Miami, Philly, Houston, L.A., even San Antonio, San Francisco, Oakland area, there doesn't seem to be a big profile food-wise for the city of Cleveland. I don't think they have a lot to offer.
For San Francisco, I think you might have to go with, like, either oysters.
Ooh, I love me some oysters. I may
know,
be going to San
Francisco.
By the coast,
you might impress LeBron with some oysters.
Yeah.
Or, kind of similar to what you were saying with San Antonio, might have to go with carnitas burrito. You know, I know
I
you
like
said
that.
Carne asada for San Antonio.
Yeah.
But for San Francisco, it's a carnitas burrito.
Texture writes there's In-N-Out Burger in Texas as well. But I don't know. Like, I don't consider that to be a Texas thing. It's weird. Like, even though they have it and it's probably the same food, if I'm in Texas, I don't feel like I've got to run out and get some In-N-Out Burger. No, if I'm in Texas, I want to get some Tex-Mex or some barbecue. Where if I'm in LA or if I'm in Vegas, I say, oh, I've got to get some In-N-Out Burger.
Just realized something. LeBron, yeah. Huge fan of wine. We take him
Napa.
Exactly.
Take him to Napa.
You know, have his run at it with all the wine that they offer.
Yeah, in fact, I just saw somebody texted that. The best food thing about San Francisco is going about 30 minutes north to Napa Valley for an amazing steak with an excellent wine. Oh, in San Francisco, how about this? They've got the chocolate factory, the Ghirardelli Chocolate Factory. That's pretty solid, too. I picture the inside of that place is like Willy Wonka's factory. Wouldn't that be amazing?
LeBron's got some good choices here in terms of the food cuisine.
Except Cleveland. Like, Cleveland, I don't think they have much to offer in this situation. And he knows that, being there for 11 years of his 15-year career. There's nothing good to eat there. Probably why he stays in such great shape. A little pudgy around the middle when he was in Miami. All the tostones and all of the pan con bistec that he consumed down here.
I mean, it's no surprise he completely went on that diet right when he got back there, you know?
That's
completely
true.
Changed his body because the food sucks in Cleveland.
Moving to Cleveland, time to diet. That'll be America's fat camp. Like, I've heard Hockman say that Cleveland should be America's graveyard. Just move everybody out of Cleveland and make the entire city a cemetery. I think Cleveland should be America's fat camp. You're struggling with your weight because there are so many great food options around you. Go to Cleveland and you will just want to fast 24 hours a day. You're going to have people beg you to eat there. Isn't the signature dish in Cleveland Spam, a texter writes? I think, weirdly or not, you know who loves Spam? Hawaiians. They love Spam in Hawaii. Deep fried Spam. Like, that's their thing. That's their thing there. But I think we've got a good option in Miami. You put some Palomilla steak, some Joe Stone crab on there. You throw some croquetas, some tostones, and maduros, some Cuban coffee to finish out the meal. I think we bring it pretty strong with that, man. I think we bring it very strong. 9 o'clock hour of the Alex Dono Show coming up. By the way, the Marlins on top of the San Francisco Giants 3-1. Ooh, I do have an update, by the way. Let me see. Okay, so we have a texter who, for some reason, is in Hartford, Connecticut tonight, listening to the show from Hartford, and he is at a Hartford Yard Goats minor league baseball game. Unbelievable team name. I put them right up there with the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. The Hartford Yard Goats. We have an update, because this guy was wondering, who has the bigger attendance tonight? The Miami Marlins, who I think probably have around 5,000-6,000 reported attendance tonight. We're still waiting on that figure. Or the Hartford Yard Goats of, are they double A, single A, triple A? We have to find that out. So, texture writes in, Yard Goats update. Jack Wynkoop has given up 11 runs. Woof. But it gets better. So Jack Wynkoop has given up 11 runs. There are children dressed as baby goats that raced during the game. I imagine between innings. Children dressed up as goats. They're double A. Okay, so that's pretty big time. Children are dressed up as goats racing. You know, Marlins got away from the sea monster races. The Yard Goats have children dressed up as goats. And Choo Choo, the mascot, is having fun regardless of the score. And he adds, more people than at the Marlins game here for sure. 9 o'clock hour, the Alex Dono Show here on WQAM.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.